Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
I apologise, especially those who are listening on the recording, if I ever burst out coughing. The dreaded cold has approached. It's that time of year where Santa comes. If you're naughty, you get a bag of coal, apparently.
All right.
Although it could be useful. But today's title, something near and dear to my heart, Trust in Hashem, He is your help and shield. Vayishlach follows probably one of the most well-known stories, even among the Gentiles, a story in which two brothers were separated by rivalry and Esav's hatred for his brother Yaakov. We know the story. Yaakov goes to his half-blind father to trick him into giving him the firstborn blessing. Once the deception got out, when Esav found out, he begged Yitzhak, his father, for a blessing, but was essentially told he would serve the younger brother Yaakov. After this whole drama, Yaakov's mother Rivka told him to flee to Haran and live with his uncle Laban. That's not French for Laban. As it says, "Thou, my son, listen to me. Flee at once to Haran, to my brother. Flee at once to Haran, to my brother Laban. Stay with him a while until your brother's fury subsides, until your brother's anger against you subsides and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will fetch you from there. Let me not lose you both in one day." I wonder if she felt some kind of irony that day. After all, it says that Rivka favoured Yaakov, but here she's worried about both. I always get annoyed when she says, "What you have done to him." Because it was her idea to trick Yitzhak. In fact, she gathered materials in order for him to facilitate said deception. It just seems she is trying to wash the blood off her hands, so to speak, and not take any responsibility for her part in this deception. In fact, one could argue that this situation could have been avoided. Because it would not have mattered if Yitzhak had blessed Esav as the firstborn, because it was dependent on Hashem's divine will and not based on a human desire. It is not about who was born first, and technically they both came out of the womb at the same time, for Yaakov gripped the heel of Esav as they were brought out into this world. That aside, this is about God's household, not Yitzhak's. Because one could say this was about inheritance. In fact, Yaakov established his own house. He never really needed anything from his father in terms of material wealth. Yaakov earned his way up, living under Laban, becoming an excellent shepherd and worker. So I doubt Yaakov was worried about who would inherit from Yitzhak. But this was about who would lead our people under God, the firstborn of God, so to speak. So it does not matter really who says what. God will show who is his in one way or another, even when we might not see it. Hashem has his ways. God could have told Yitzhak, no, Yaakov is to be given the firstborn blessing, as was done for Yitzhak himself. As God says, but Abraham said, Adonai Hashem, what can you give me, seeing that I shall die childless, and the one in charge of my household is Damesek Eliezer? Abraham said further, since you have granted me no offspring, my steward will be my heir. The word of Hashem came to him in reply, that one shall not be your heir, none but your very own issue shall be your heir. So Abraham's tried to take things into his own hands. And God says, no. How can he not do the same for Yitzhak? Why are they not just... They say to Yitzhak, what are you doing? You're selling me sugar now. You naughty, naughty boy. Don't you know Yaakov is the one to replace you? But I guess because Rivka took matters into her own hand, Hashem allowed it to be done. There's no mention of his approval, nor disapproval, despite the fact that it was caused that despite the fact that it caused not so much of a peaceful house. After all, that's what we all aim for, shalom bayis. Peace the house. It caused Yaakov, who was known to be quiet or mild, as some translations put it, a man of the field, which describes someone who chooses a peaceful career path, as opposed to Esav, who chose hunting. Not that there is anything wrong with hunting, because people need to eat. But for him, it became a sport rather than for survival. It forced this mild man out of his comfort zone, as it were, into what would seem the role of wilderness. That journey caused Yaakov to fully rely on God, because he had no one. No mother, no father, and definitely no brother to pick him up or guide him. There was no WhatsApp, there was no Gmail, there was no texts, there was no phoning, there was nothing. This day and age, aneurysms would have spread across the world if that was the day's level of technology, or lack of. Imagine, I've went 5 minutes without texting my loved one. So he's all alone. But Yaakov sought God and he responded, remember, I am with you. I will protect you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. It brings us to today's parasha. Yaakov is yet again facing a similar experience as when he left his father's house. Essa was coming to meet him with 400 men. Not looking for tea and biscuits. And no doubt an army. Is his brother still angry? Will he kill Yaakov? What about the children? Will Esav kill them in revenge? Will he plunder all the material wealth Yaakov worked hard for? Or if you ask some people who stole from Laban, all these would have been going through his mind. And as we know, he made two camps and made a convoy of goods and sent them to Esav, his brother. I was then alone. Helpless, anxiety peaking. Try and put yourself into his shoes for a moment. You're alone. Your family have gone ahead. All your material wealth, your phone, your WhatsApps, it's all gone. Nothing in your pockets. But Suris. Anxiety. Then it says Yaakov was alone and a figure wrestled with him until the break of dawn. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he wrenched Yaakov's hip at its socket, so that the socket of his hip was strained, and he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go for dawn's breaking." But he answered, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And the conclusion said to other, "What is your name?" He replied, "Yaakov." "Your name shall no longer be Yaakov, but Israel. For you have striven with human being, with beings divine and humans, and have prevailed." This, however, had little to do with Esav and the approaching army. No mention of divine help. Nowhere in that did the angel say, "Don't worry, we've got it handled. If he jumps you, you'll jump him." "No, don't worry, there's an army of angels nearby." If we remember, he saw the two caps of angels there to greet him. In a nutshell, we are just told God's angels clotheslined Yaakov and called him Yisrael. One can only see it by inference, and that is the implication of the account. We could see the reason he was called Israel is because he contended with an angel and with humans, such as Laban and Esav, and whoever came against Yaakov. Therefore, I guess we could see it as God saying, "If you win against an angel, you can take Esav." If you went into a boxing ring and you saw an angel at the other side, I think you'd be sweating it. But here it says Yaakov won. So if you came out of that fight victorious, I'm sure you'd be feeling pretty good about yourself. So is that the intention? However, what is puzzling is that God wounded Yaakov so that he limped. What use would that be in an instance of combat? It doesn't make sense. It seems this whole interaction was the polar opposite of what one would think would happen. Come for words. They're there. I'll give you the strength. But here he does the opposite. He wrestles Yaakov. He maims him. He can't walk properly. Probably feels limited by his pain, realizing how much of a human he really is. So often after or during an illness, you realize how weak the body actually is, how frail we are. It could be that God intentionally maimed Yaakov so that he would not attack Esav. Perhaps in a panic. Whatever the case, it humbled Yaakov even more than he was. For it caused him to completely trust in God. Literally with his life. And what was the purpose of the convoy of the material wealth? Yaakov was teaching Esav a valuable lesson of what it is to be a firstborn. That is, material wealth or inheritance means very little to him. And that his intention behind his deception long ago was not personal. Because remember, when these two men met again, all this history would have been brought up. Yaakov would have known that all this would have been brought up. So this is his indirect message to Esav. But the real intention was so that he may serve God. Not to gain material wealth or possessions. Because Yitzhak was no doubtedly a rich man. Yaakov was saying, take what you always wanted from the beginning. Because that's what Esav wanted. He didn't want God. He didn't want to lead this people. He just wanted more things and wanted to look good. That's why his hunting turned into a sport, because often hunters are celebrated, turn into idols. He wanted stature, but for his own gain. Esav had no intention of falling after God, as we know. He did the opposite and went to his uncle, Ishmael, who was a pagan. If he loved God, do you think he'd go to a pagan? Would he take pagan wives to himself, which he knew displeased his father and irritated his mother? Even more so, displeased God. All Esav wanted was material wealth and stature. These, of course, are bad traits for a leader. And Baruch Hashem, he he never got what he wanted. Therefore, we should apply this to ourselves. How do we view material wealth over God? Do we prioritize work over God? Where does God fit into our family? Does he come first? Or do we fold under pressure and eat the dreaded pork sausage roll from Gehenna? Sorry, I mean Greg's. When we are in a helpless situation, when we are humbled, when we see no other way out, and when we see only that God can be trusted and able to save, is when he steps in. Yes. And to those who belong to him, such a situation will happen. If we are not following his ways, he'll bring us to a place where we'll have to be humbled. Moshe Rabbeinu, Yaakov, Abraham have all went through these situations. King David. Not because he's some mean God who loves to punish people. It is because he loves us. He wants to be connected with us. And he wants us to feel how he feels about us. God brings us first. He wants the best for us. Thus, in helpless situations, he responds. When we are humbled and we realize what we have done wrong and we turn to him and he answers. So, my friends, if we take anything away from this, it is that if we love God, then put him first. And if we put him first, he is able to save. So trust in Hashem, he is your help and shield.